Honey, what happened? He breathed a deep sigh, blowing some of the agitation through his teeth, and I could hear him easing himself into a chair. I drove out that way, and mind you, this is the first time in a long while that I've been up in that Castle Rock territory near the South Fork of the Moreau, except for that pipeline they got going through there. He swallowed. It's a fort is what it is, Walt. I mean, to tell you that they've got walls and fences up all over the place and gun towers. Honest to God, gun towers. Now they call them observation posts, but they're gun towers is what they are. I saw individuals up there with deer rifles, and I gotta tell you, I am not happy about this happening in my county.
Who did you talk to?
Some jaybird named Ronald Lanier. I get the feeling he's the Grand Imperial Poobah around the place. Him and another fellow by the name of Lockhart and some severe-looking individual by the name of Bidarte. I leaned forward.
And they say they never heard of either of them?
Yeah, and I know that's bullshit because I've still got the slip of paper she gave me with directions on how to get to the place.
Did you get any ID from her?
I raised my head as Vic came in and sat in her usual chair, propping her usual boots up on my usual desk. Walt, these people don't carry any ID. I got a name from her, Sarah Tisdale. The funny thing is, there was a phone number down here at the bottom that I didn't pay any attention because it was out of state. Walt, it's Wyoming.
307?
You bet. Give it to me. I already tried calling it, but there wasn't any answer and no answering machine, of course. Give it to me anyway.
He read me the number, and I scribbled it down on the paper blotter on my desk, tore it off, and handed it to my undersheriff.
We'll get the reverse registry and find out where it is.
Listening to the troubled man on the other end of the line, I dropped my pen and enjoyed the view as Vic left in search of the information I needed.
Tim?
Yeah.
He sighed again, and I waited, then asked, "What's really troubling you?"
Walt, you know me. I'm for freedom, folks' rights to bear arms and all. I mean, that Waco shit needed to be handled better, but it needed to be handled.
Yep.
Well, what's going on up there near Castle Rock is wrong. I was up there the first time about a year ago when we started getting complaints about abuse and child services wanted to know how many kids are up there and whether they were getting a proper education.
Uh-huh.
We found out about them because a few of them came in filing for welfare benefits, claiming that their husbands had run off and left when their damn husbands are sitting out there in the pickups waiting for them.
There was another pause as he caught his breath.
Those kids aren't going anywhere but the School of Hard Knocks. And the funny thing is that the majority of them are young men about the same age as the one you've got. They have all this heavy equipment, I mean, more than you'd need in a ranching or farming operation, but they'd sunk lines into the river for water and didn't have any irrigation rights. And you know as well as I do that there's more men died over ditches than bitches in this country.
I leaned back in my chair.
True. Well, the local ranchers got in an uproar, and we went up there with warrants and got in the place.
There was another pause.
Walt, my grandfolks come up in the dirty 30s, hard times when you had to do whatever it took to survive. I've looked at the pictures and heard the stories, but I've never seen anything like this. It's one thing to read about this stuff in the news, but it's something else to come up against it face to face. People up there are just living in sheds, women and children, 13-year-old girls married to 50-year-old men. I mean, they're not married in the legal sense. That's how they try and get away with the support checks. They marry these girls off to these men, seal them, they call it, in private ceremonies.
There was another pause, and when he spoke again, there was a catch in his voice.
There was a little girl. She didn't look right. Birth defects. There was this one little girl that comes up to me.
Right. We're busting up these irrigation pipes they've got going in the river, and she pulls on my pant leg, wanting to know why it is we're taking away their water so that they can't water the cows that they're going to milk to make enough money to have something to eat.
I kneeled down and took her little hand, and Walt, she didn't have any fingernails.
I don't know what to say, Tim.
How's that boy, the one you found?
He says his name is Cord.
Vic re-entered and sat in her chair with a massive computer file, her index finger stuffed in the middle.
Normal, or appears to be. I had the school psychologist give him a going over, and she seemed to think that he's all right.
Lucky you.
I fingered the brim of my hat, spinning it on the crown and thinking how the simple gesture was sometimes indicative of the job as a whole.
I'll keep you informed as to what's going on over here, and you'll do the same for me?
Sure will. I hung up my phone and looked past the bruises that looked like crow's wings spread beneath the terror's tarnished gold eyes. There but for the grace of God go I. She dropped the book onto my desk and opened it. Trouble in Rabbit Choker Land? That polygamy group up in the north of Timms County? He doesn't know what to do about it. It's a cult. They're fucking cults. The fact that they're trying to cover this shit up under the auspices of actual religion only makes it that much worse. I thought you thought all religions were cults. Some are worse than others. I should know. I grew up Catholic. She heaved the book around, her finger pointing to a number about a third of the way down the page. Surrey, Short Drop, General Mercantile. I read the exchange and picked up my phone. A commercial number? Surrey, Short Drop. They're in county and I don't even know where either of them are. Surrey and Short Drop were tiny towns in the southeast corner of the county. Surrey had been named after a remittance man born the fourth son of four. In the late 18th century, the first son of a British nobleman inherited the family fortune. The second went into the military, the third into the clergy, leaving the fourth to ride into Powder Junction every month for his remittance check so that he could drink himself to death on the high plains. Short Drop, which was a stone's throw away, was where a member of Butch Cassidy's hole-in-the-wall gang had been caught and lynched, hence the name referring to a short drop on a long rope. The other point of interest in the area was the infamous Teapot Dome, of Teapot Dome scandal fame, named for a tiny rock formation on top of the U.S. Naval Oil Reserves, which had brought rightful disgrace upon the administration of Warren G. Harding in the 20s. The illegal sale of the Teapot Dome to Sinclair Oil had been the biggest national scandal in the country until a few guys back in the 70s had gotten caught burgling an office in a place called Watergate. I dialed the number and waited, not particularly expecting anyone to answer. Imagine my surprise when someone did. Short Drop, Merc. The voice was older, female, and didn't sound like it would brook much nonsense. This is Sheriff Walt Longmire. Well, it's about time. I made a face for the benefit of nobody in particular. Excuse me? Is this the so-called sheriff of our county? Well, yes, it is, and who is this? She ignored my question and launched into a tirade. Look, I talked to that moron you've got posted over in Powder Junction, and he said you were going to send somebody around to talk to those idiots over near East Spring Draw, down near Sulphur Creek. I remembered Double Tough mentioning something about disagreements in the area, but that he wasn't sure how to proceed. Yep, I'm kind of following up on that and was hoping you could give me a little more information. They threatened a bunch of people with a shotgun, and we're about to go out there and do a little threatening ourselves. Well, we wouldn't want that. I'll send a deputy to have a word, but for the time being, I'd appreciate it if you would just avoid them. The harumph carried across the county. That's going to be a little tough, since they own 12,000 acres around here. I'll speak with them myself, if need be. In the meantime, I was wondering if you'd ever heard of a young woman by the name of Sarah Tisdale? There was a long pause, and the woman's voice changed. My daughter. You've heard from my daughter? Chapter 3 Vic reached over and turned on the heater as I took the exit at Powder Junction and followed 192 southeast across the Powder River, leaving the sun as it lingered along the mountains to the west, and drove on towards Surrey Short Drop. In the perversity of western geography, the poetic-sounding locale of Surrey had pretty much dropped off the map, but the town of Short Drop had, in a small town way, thrived. The rolling hills were a khaki brown, even with the wet summer, and shimmered bronze against the snow fields at the southern tip of the Bighorn Mountains. But everywhere you looked, there were oil derricks, rhythmically heaving the crude petroleum from the earth. I'd worked as a roughneck on an oil crew for an entire summer in my youth, part of my father's plan that I should see what a life without a proper education meant. Though only a half hour from the interstate highway, the suburbs of Short Drop might as well have been on the moon. No fucking way. I glanced at my undersheriff's technicolor eyes and felt another twinge of sympathy. What? She gestured at the surrounding landscape. Who the hell travels two-thirds of the way across the country and stops here thinking, this is it, this is where I want to spend the rest of my life? She shook her head. No fucking way.
I glanced around at the stark shadows being thrown from the sharp angle of the sun, causing everything to suddenly glimmer the way only dying things can. It's a lot like Nebraska down here.
If that's supposed to recommend it, it doesn't.
We drove along, and she remained unimpressed.
So how come I haven't ever been down here?
Because you didn't receive the traditional hazing that all the other deputies get when they sign on.
She smirked. As it should be.
The radio crackled, and the voice of one of the said deputies resounded through the tinny speaker. Static.
Sheriff, this is base. Come in.
Vic pulled my mic from the dash and keyed the button.
What do you want?
Static.
The kid's back over from working at the Busy Bee, and I was wondering if I had to lock him up, or was it okay if I just let him sleep in the cell with the door open?
Is Dorothy still trying to get that spot above the garage behind her squared away for him? Vic asked the question, and Double Tough took a minute, probably asking the kid.
Static. Yep, but he says it's not ready yet.
Fine by me if the door is open. Static. And Ruby left Dog here. You want me to feed him? Vic spoke into the mic in a pretty good impersonation. Yep, and when Sizer Vittoria gets in, you can head back to Powder Junction.
Static.
Roger that. She flipped the mic up onto my dash and propped a boot against the transmission hump again.
He doesn't sound too happy about coming back down here, does he?
We drove on, watching the grass sway in the wind like the waves of some lost ocean, the landscape remaining pretty much the same as it had for the last 15 minutes. I looked at Vic again. Let me guess.
No fucking way,
I grunted. My family settled here.
No, your family settled about an hour north up against the mountains where it's pretty.
Define pretty.
Green, with a variation in altitude.
Victoria Moretti and I had a running argument about what exactly constituted aesthetic beauty in the American West, and I couldn't help but point out that her view always included green grass and trees, or the American East. I glanced around. It has a more subtle beauty. The response was nothing if not predictable. We came over the rolling hills of the Pine Ridge and could see the ancient, still leafy cottonwood that was supposedly over 100 years old at the bottom of the valley. There, a tree. I hope you're happy. We pulled along the turnoff, and I dropped the 3/4 ton into the town of Short Drop proper, where a wooden sign with burnt-in lettering proclaimed, Short Drop, the place where laughing Sam Carey, the last of Butch Cassidy's Hole in the Wall, took a short drop and a long rope. Along one of the gigantic limbs of the old tree hung a noose of thick hemp, swaying in the breeze, monument to a violent act over a century old. Vic slumped back in her seat.
Leave it to you, assholes. You finally grow a tree tall enough, and you hang somebody from it.
I followed Main Street's dirt road and took a right onto Jackson as Vic gazed at Short Drop's country school, whose teams had the likely nickname the Hangmen.
Why do they bother?
I misunderstood. Go to school?
She pointed. With signs. There are only 4 streets.
I nudged my truck across the red dirt roadway and parked in front of one of the commercial buildings, the Short Drop Mercantile, and killed the engine. This is it. She leaned forward and craned her neck, looking back and forth at the Merc, a bar, and a trailer with a sign out front.
The library is a single wide?
At least they've got one. I unbuckled my seatbelt and cracked the door open. With the fading sun, the air was growing sharp, and I was glad that I'd brought my leather jacket. Come on. There was a wooden walkway that connected the 4 buildings that made up downtown Short Drop, but the overhead porch reached only across the front of the mercantile and the bar, the only buildings of any historical repute. They were the old types with the false fronts, and the color scheme appeared to be shades of gray with white trim. The paint was peeling a little, but they were both in pretty good shape, and I have to admit that my trajectory swayed just a touch when I saw the Rainier Beer sign in the next-door watering hole, again aptly named The Noose. Vic joined me on the walkway, our boots ringing in the silence of the town like some Anthony Mann Western. She lingered for a moment, and as if on cue, a slight wind came up and powdered its way through town. Her voice was low, but I could still hear it.
No fucking way. Old-fashioned lettering spiraled across the bottom of the windows, offering up quilting supplies, books, ammunition, and gunsmithing. I ignored the hand-scripted closed Happy Trails sign, pushed open the door, and walked onto swaled and cupped pine flooring with no board less than a foot wide. The ceilings were high, at least 20 feet, tiled with pressed tin. Black fans with wooden propellers spun idly, and track lighting spotted us as we entered the establishment. Rows of bookshelves staggered against the wall to my right, sagging with the weight of antiquarian tomes and thumbed paperbacks that appeared to be organized in no particular order. There was a counter to my right with an old cash register, and a few glass cases that held groceries, bread, canned goods, boxes of cereal, and stick candy that I hadn't seen since I was a kid. There was a long counter at a 45-degree angle, with a few rifles on stands, some pistols in a case, and above that the better part of a wall full of ammunition. Myriad taxidermy heads were on the wall, some from far-flung reaches like Africa and South America. They would have made my big-game hunter friend Omar Rhodes proud. My eyes focused on a massive water buffalo whose head was slightly turned and who looked out into the street as if he might pull the rest of himself from the wall and make a break for it. "Sheriff?" I turned to see a woman coming down from a mezzanine at the back of the main room. She was in her 60s and holding in her hands what appeared to be a crock pot, using a set of dish towels as oven mitts as she came. Handsome, with a good spread to her shoulders, light brown hair streaked with gray, and partially hidden behind a pair of cat's-eye glasses, direct blue eyes, almost cobalt. She glanced at my deputy, who had stalled out by the case of books to the right, and then at me. "Expected you earlier." I tipped my hat. "We got here as quick as we could." With a curt nod, she walked past me around the center counter, where she used a hip to try and slide open a large iron-trimmed door. "Can I help you with that?" Without waiting, I gripped the steel handle and pulled the door open, revealing a short hallway between the murk and the bar next door. Her voice echoed after her as she walked through. "Come along and I'll buy you a beer." Seeing no reason to loiter, I glanced at Vic, who shelved her book and followed with an eyebrow arched, as usual, like a cat's back. The doorway from the murk opened up to the left of the bar, and it appeared as if I was going to get my Rainier. I ducked under a large rattlesnake skin tacked to a board and continued around the coolers on one end of a bar made from old barn siding. The surface had been sealed with polyurethane, entombing what looked to be close to 50 more snake skins. "A lot of rattlers around this place?" She set the crock pot onto the flat surface, reached into the cooler, and placed 2 ice-cold long-neck bottles of Rainier beer in front of us. "Not anymore." I glanced at the labels. "You know my flavor." "Everybody in this county knows your flavor, Walt Longmire." She stuck a hand across the bar and winked. "Eleanor Tisdale. I used to be on the library board with your wife. Sorry for your loss." "Thank you." I shook her hand and nudged one of the wooden stools out with my boot for my undersheriff. "My deputy, Victoria Moretti." They shook, and I asked, "You own both places?" She nodded and adjusted her glasses that trailed a set of pearls around the back of her neck. "Run the library, too, but people also borrow books from the mercantile." She was classic Wyoming, that indiscriminate age between 30 and 100, where the women find a comfort for themselves and just settle in. I keep the door closed to discourage drunken shopping. She reached up with hands that had seen hard labor and effortlessly twisted the caps off, sliding the pair of Rainiers further our way. "You found my daughter?" Vic sat beside me, and I turned my eyes to the bartender. "Well..." "She's in trouble?" I paused for a moment, took a sip, and tried to decide how I was going to play this. "Possibly." That would follow. It was always her signature. She leaned her elbows on the business side of the bar and sighed. "My husband was in the oil business."
"Was?"
"Dale died about 3 years ago. Light plane crash down in Mexico."
"Sorry to hear it."
She gestured away my condolences with a wave. "Not as much as I was. Sold the majority of the family ranch to those yahoos over at East Spring before he died." She thought about it. "Sarah was a lot like him. Headstrong to the point of idiocy. He once told her that he wasn't going to save the ranch for her if she left. So in predictable Tisdale manner she did, and he didn't.
I nodded, not quite sure what to say to that.
When was the last time you had contact with her? She stared at me as if I'd just joined hands with the point of idiocy group myself, and then laughed. 17 years ago, come August 6th. She crossed her arms and settled the cat's eye glasses on Vic, and then back to me. Sheriff, maybe you better tell me what you are wanting.
Eleanor, how about you take a seat?
She looked concerned, but remained standing. We had a young man show up in Durant this weekend. Looked like a runaway, about 15 years old. I tracked him back to Butte County, South Dakota, where the sheriff there informed me that a woman, approximately the age of your daughter, who identified herself as Sarah Tisdale, had come into his office and reported that her son was missing. The tension in the woman's back pulled her up a little straighter. Son? When I called him and told him I had custody of the boy, he drove up to where it is your daughter was supposedly living, but the people there said they'd never heard of her or the boy. Interestingly enough, the map she left with the sheriff had a phone number scribbled at the bottom. Your phone number. Eleanor Tisdale groped for a stool and pulled it underneath herself. Do you have any photographs? Anything that might... I fingered the Polaroid that we always take to keep track of lodgers from my shirt pocket and held it out to her. This is the boy. She read the single word written in red magic marker at the bottom border. Cord? That's his name. She took it gently and held it as if it might vanish. We don't have any photographs of your daughter. And to be honest, we don't know where she might be.
Oh, my.
I lowered my head to get in her line of sight. I take it he looks familiar?
The spitting image.
She got up and punched no sale on the cash register at the end of the bar and walked back to us with a school photo of a pretty young girl with long blonde hair and deep sapphire eyes.
Where is he now?
I took the photo and studied it. The resemblance was, as they say, uncanny. He's safe in Durant at a friend's. I didn't see any reason for him to be shuttled off to a foster home since he has a mother looking for him and relatives in county.
Have you heard any more from Sarah?
Unfortunately, no. I was kind of hoping you had.
She shook her head. No. Nothing in 17 years. Dale, when he was around, wouldn't even say her name. He used to refer to her as that ungrateful child. Her eyes unfocused for a moment, and she began a familiar verse. Turn all her mother's pains and benefits. She faltered, and I continued the Shakespeare for her. To laughter and contempt, that she may feel how sharper than a serpent's tooth it is to have a thankless child. The cobalt eyes stayed distant and then focused on the photo in her trembling hands. He's 15?
Yep. I watched as she continued to finger the photograph like a holy relic. The math works out, doesn't it? How about we trade photos and I'll get this one back to you after we find her? I was about to add more when the bar door swung open to the accompaniment of an attached jangling bell. The middle-aged man in the doorway was pale and painfully lean, with red hair and a sharp face half hidden under the bill of a black John Deere ball cap. His clothes, an off-white nylon dress shirt and a powder-blue blazer, were rumpled and hung off him like a bad hanger. Slung over his shoulder was an expensive, spacey-looking tactical shotgun with a small flashlight mounted underneath the barrel. Eleanor's voice sounded behind me. Can I help you? I leaned to my right to see around Vic, who gave him a quick look and immediately dismissed the odd character as Ichabod Double-Aught Buck. She sipped her beer. What, were you born in a barn? She placed the bottle back on the bar and murmured to herself,
Yeah, you probably were.
He didn't move for a moment, then half turned as if to leave. Evidently he wasn't happy to see the greater portion of the off-duty Absaroka County Sheriff's Department seated at the bar. He stood there in profile and then cleared his throat as if he was about to make a speech, but it was a short one. "Mr. Lanier would like to talk to you." Eleanor looked puzzled. "Who?" He looked even more surprised at her response, and took a step into the bar with a vexed look on his face, as if he shouldn't have to be bothered with repeating, let alone explaining himself. "Mr. Roy Lanier, owner-operator of the East Spring Ranch, would like to talk to you." I stood, tucked the photo of Sarah Tisdale into my shirt pocket, and took a step toward him. "And who are you?" Perhaps hoping for a prompter, he looked back out the door again. "George! Are you quail hunting at this time of night?" He glanced at me, but his eyes returned to Eleanor. Evidently, his one-track mind was always in danger of derailment. I pointed at the shotgun on his back. It's against the law to bring a gun into an establishment that serves liquor. The eyes switched to Vic and then back to me, and his voice and manner changed, telling me a great deal about him. "She's wearing one in this godless establishment, and so are you." I took another step, bringing myself within arm's reach of him. "She's my deputy, and maybe I should introduce myself. I'm Sheriff Walt Longmire. And your full name is?" "George Joseph Lanier." He stood there looking back and forth between us again with a kind of wildness in his eyes. I thought for a moment that he was going to do something stupid, but he didn't. Instead, he took a step back onto the boardwalk. "There. Are you happy now?" I reached over and closed the door in his face. Vic barked a laugh as I spoke to him through the glass pane. "Go tell your family you can come back in here when you learn some manners." He stood there looking at me with a blistering hatred, then turned and walked off the boardwalk toward a large, decked-out, one-ton, dually parked perpendicular to mine. I turned back to the proprietor. "Who's Roy Lanier?" She shook her head. "I guess he's the one everybody's been having trouble with the last few weeks. Some of his men..." She was interrupted again by the sound of the door behind me, and this time I turned with my hand resting on my Colt just in case. The Sack of Bones trap shooter wasn't there, but in its place was another odd-looking individual who was a hell of a lot more impressive in both stature and dress. He was a tall, well-toned Hispanic man in black jeans and a dark suit jacket, his pork-chop sideburns sticking out almost as far as the brim of his black cattleman's hat. He quickly slipped it off to reveal full locks of curling dark hair. "Hola." I stood there looking down at him. "Hey, I would like to apologize." He gestured with the hat. "My compadre learned his social graces from cows." I nodded. "So, are you Roy Lanier?" He laughed, obviously much amused by the thought. "Oh, no, I simply work for Mr. Lanier." He extended his hand toward me. "I'm Tomas Bidarte. I am the poet laureate of Nuevo León." "Laureate, not laureate?" He smiled. And it was a dazzling display, revealing some creative dentistry with more than 24 carats. "My poetry is more for the cantina than the parlor." I took the hand. "What do you do when you're not rhyming?" We shook, and his grip was like cast iron. "Work for Mr. Lanier." I looked around the vaquero toward the truck with its running lights on, sitting in the half-light of the approaching night. "Well, it's an odd time to come visiting, especially armed. Is Roy out there? Because I'm dying to meet him." He continued smiling, studying me. "And I'm sure he's going to want to meet you too, Sheriff." "Send him in." Bidarte turned his matinee idol profile toward the door, and then back to me. "That, senor, might be a little easier said than done." The man in the back of the brand-new King Ranch one-ton diesel was testing its rear suspension. He must have tipped the scales at an easy 400 pounds.
He was comfortably seated in what must have been a custom-built lazy boy throne, complete with his sheepskin slippers prominently displayed on the foot extension. He wore an oversized, expensive-looking bathrobe draped over a snap-button shirt with a large turquoise bolo tie and a pair of TCU purple sweatpants. On his head was an honest-to-God sombrero.
"The harvest has passed and the summer has ended, and we are not saved."
Vic and Eleanor had joined me at the edge of the wooden walkway, an advantage that made us the same height as Roy Lanier.
"Jeremiah, chapter 8, verse 20.
He turned his head and looked at me.
"You know the word of God, Sheriff?"
"I know entire sentences." He continued to study me, unsure if I was the real deal or if I'd only stumbled upon a line of scripture, then gestured toward one of his massive legs.
"Inconvenient gout. I apologize for having you come out here into the night like this, but my joints are hurting so bad I'm afraid I wouldn't make it up those steps."
I watched as John Deere in a ball cap stayed on the other side of the truck bed with the shotgun in his hands. The massive man in the chair settled his eyes on me.
"I suppose I should introduce myself. I'm Roy Lanier."
Vic was quick to respond.